You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 307. This week, we talk about Fathom, Volume 1. Visit welcometocomics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now, the cast begins.
I saw Thor Ragnarok. It was fucking awesome.
Right.
And I went out the next day and bought the Valkyrie action figure because it's fucking sick.
Did you buy the 2-pack?
Yeah, I bought the 2-pack.
Okay, because when the day we talked about it, I went to Target and I was like, oh, this is what Andy and I were talking about. And so I bought it.
Yeah. And Thor, so Thor was pretty good. The Valkyrie's really good. And I'm happy because I have the Jane Foster Thor as well. So I have Jane Foster posing like, look at my sick muscles, and Valkyrie going, oh, sugoi! oh my god, what sick muscles you got, bruh.
I should take a picture of my little Thor character action figure corner.
Yeah.
I like that lightning effect that came with the Thor figure.
Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah.
Oh, and I haven't bought Jane Foster yet, but I have...
It's pretty good enough.
I have Hela... Thor, and I have Hela and the Thor Valkyrie 2-pack from the new movies.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys see the Infinity War trailer?
Sure did.
I'm interested to see how abstract they get, because my wife saw it and she was completely not interested.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I think the reason why I was hyped for it is because I know...
Because it's fucking Thanos.
Yeah, I don't know what the movie's gonna be about, but right, it's fucking Thanos, and apparently his black—what are they called? Those five dudes he hangs out with. They're recent. I forget what their group. I think they're called the Cabal or something.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them is in the preview. The person who throws the spear, I think, is Proxima Midnight, which is one of the characters. Yeah, but I think the reason why I'm hyped is because I know it's Thanos and stuff. But if you don't really know about the comics, it just looks like a big war, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's fine. This is supposed to be a teaser trailer, right? So, I think it'll be... I don't know. I didn't realize it was coming out in May.
Yeah, it's right around the corner.
I thought we had a lot of time left.
No, they've got all the team together. Everybody's going to be there. They got all the they need.
So we get Black Panther in February, and then Avengers in May, and then what, Deadpool's in June? Deadpool 2?
Yeah, and then Captain Marvel's later the next year too, I think, isn't it? Or no, it's 2019.
Really?
I think it's 2019 actually. But we were watching it and my wife was just bored by it. She was like, it's just more of them punching each other. She's like, this is why we still haven't seen Ultron in Civil War. It's just more punching each other, and it's not interesting for her.
Ultron's not good. Don't watch Ultron.
Right, but then I was like, well, yeah, that's what I told her. That's what the Avengers movies are for. The stakes are huge, and it's just a big, I was like, I told her it's the superhero version of Fast and Furious. You don't watch it for the plot. You watch it for the action. If you want character and story, you go look at the individual movies, I was like, we watched Thor Ragnarok and now you want to watch Doctor Strange. And, if you like Thor, you go watch Thor. If you like Black Panther, you go watch Black Panther. And that led us in the conversation of well, what happens if you like Black Widow? You go watch Captain America?
Avengers?
Other Avengers
actually,
movies?
Yeah, World she's Punter? In the Captain America movies. She's also in Iron Man, too. She's in Iron Man 2. Yeah,
but my wife instantly got super frustrated. She was like, that's some bullshit.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. And fucking Wonder Woman got hers first. Wonder Woman hasn't been moving for goddamn ever.
I think But Black Widow, like, what would that movie be about? She doesn't really have, like, superpowers, and like I like her as a character, but I'm trying to think of it from a perspective of, like, people general public. I don't know.
I mean,
it would do that well.
We did a Black Widow series for the show way back when, and I think we read one with the new Black Widow, right? And they did, like, it was the Face Off.
It was Face Off,
and it was but it was super creepy. So I don't know if I'd do that one, but there's definitely, like, a Cold War, like, Red Room kind of a thing you could do.
But there's a movie coming out with Jennifer Lawrence this year or next year, where it's basically Black Widow's origin story. Like, it's these Russian spies that, like, are supposed to supposed to be sexy and dangerous and stuff. It's like exactly, I was like, oh, they're making a Black Widow movie without Black Widow.
See, and I think, like, the Black Widow movie, the problem with Winter Soldier is that it almost should have been half of it should have been a Black Widow movie. Like, you could have Black Widow be all the weird Cold War stuff, but they want to shoehorn that into S.H.I.E.L.D. because Hydra, you know? Mm-hmm. So then that gets shunted into S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Coulson in the TV show. But, like Arnim Zola would have been a cool character for Black Widow to go up against in some ways. You know, like, there's a lot of characters that they've come up with that would have been really cool in Black Widow movies, but they got shoehorned into other franchises because of the way they wanted the universe to flow. So I think she's just kind of been, like, left to the side, because now you're right. Like, who's her villain? I don't know. War?
Yeah, I mean, she doesn't really have... But even in the comics, like, we read the series about Black Widow, but... She's like a perpetual like side character, like, you know.
Yeah.
She's worse off than most. Like, remember when we did Doctor Strange? We could only find, like, one Doctor Strange solo book. But I think you could do a Doctor Strange solo, and I think that because they made the movie, it lends itself to the fact, because he has, like, an interesting backstory, and he's kind of very different from a lot of the other Marvel characters. But I think Black Widow, when you kind of boil it down, she's just like a generic spy. And I personally think Black Widow is a great character, but I think to most people outside of the, you know, the core audience comic, like normal comic book readers, she just is a normal spy.
Hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, for better or worse, I don't think we're going to get a Black Widow movie.
Yeah.
Who are the other, like, the other major female characters in the Marvel Universe are, like, Scarlet Witch, who's obviously in this, but, like, she's a much more problematic character. And she didn't really do that much. And her backstory is convoluted as fuck.
Yeah. I think the main problem is a lot of people that you would want to bring in as female members of the X-Men or female members of the Avengers either come from X-Men or come from one of the franchises that are owned by other studios. So when it comes down to what Marvel owns and what they can produce as part of this universe, those options are way more limited. Like, you could bring in Storm via Black Panther, you know, make a Storm movie. I think a Storm movie with her 80s mohawk would be fucking badass. Make it a period movie. That'd be sick. You know, and it's a perfect time for it, because it would come off awesome. If she was, like, awesome, badass, black feminist, mohawk, lightning fucking powers, that'd be awesome right now. But you can't do that, you know? And I think Captain Marvel is great, but it's too late getting off the ground, you know? Like, it should have been years ago.
So what's going to happen, right, is after Infinity War, they're going to do, like, the next phase of Marvel heroes. We're not going to see, like, Thor and Iron Man and Captain America and stuff. It's going to be, like, Spider-Man, you know, Tom Holland Spider-Man, mm-hmm. and, like, these new crop of heroes that have been introduced recently, because Iron Man's been in literally, like, every movie.
Yeah.
And I think Robert Downey Jr.,
it's fucking is awesome.
Tony Stark. But at some point he just can't keep showing up in movies forever. So what's going to happen is, you know, I think that Captain Marvel will be a major character in the post Infinity War world. And I think she's probably the best choice. Because I'm, like, trying to think of other major female Avengers. And, like, Spider-Woman is one of them. But she's really complicated. And I think people will get confused because there's Spider-Woman and Spider-Man. But Spider-Woman doesn't really have spider powers.
That's true.
There's a lot to it. I think Marvel will try to do... We'll make an effort to make female characters, especially now that they're run by Disney. I think Disney tries to cater to everybody because they want to make truckloads of money, which is fine. And so I think maybe they will make female characters more prominent. I mean, Captain Marvel is one of the leaders of the Avengers, so maybe she'll take that role on going forward. I think that would be cool. But we'll just have to wait and see.
Like, Disney, I don't think... I'm a Disney fanboy on multiple levels, but I think saying that they want to make truckloads of money, that's true. But I think they're a lot of times they don't get credit that they deserve as a company. Like, people talk about the Disneyfication of franchises, and that's why they didn't want Lucasfilm to be sold to Disney, because it's all going to be, you know, Mickey Mouse ears. But I think Disney doesn't get as much credit as they should as a company for being relatively woke as a major media franchise. Yes, yeah. they water things down, but they're also, like, making Moana, and they remade the Tangled movie, right? I think they were Tangled, or was that Pixar? I don't know. But they are all about female protagonists all over the place now, not just Rey and Disney, or Rey and Star Wars, but, like, they are female protagonists. They are diversification. They are all of these representation things that a lot of other media companies are really slow to adapt. And sure, it's, you know, Disney-fied and safe, but they're all about it.
Oh no, I am not. I didn't mean that to come across
okay
negatively. I think without Disney, we would not have new Star Wars movies. There's no way.
Yeah,
no one would have touched that because
after the prequels.
Yeah, after the prequels. I mean, but because Disney is Disney, and they have, you know, they wield a lot of power in media, and they can take risks like that.
Yeah.
But they could also take the time to make sure they make the right decisions. And we, you know, you can see that with Force Awakens. Like, people talk about how it's just New Hope again, but those people are just don't pay attention. Like, there are similarities, yes, but there are Rey is totally different from Luke. Like, they're not similar characters, aside from the fact that they both grew up in the desert and they were kind of orphans, you know. That's a whole other thing I could get into.
And, you know, and I hear that argument a lot, and I came to the realization, like, people say that, and you know what? Like, fine, sure. If it's a blatant rewrite and redressing of A New Hope, that's fine, because New Hope came out 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you saw that when you were 18, you're almost 60. So what the fuck are your kids going to watch? The prequels, those are, I mean, they're okay, but they're not really good movies. If you just want to redress A New Hope and give it a shiny sticker on it, you know, like, Force Awakens does a pretty damn good job of that. Like, so if you want to get kids into Star Wars, like, if you want to get a whole new generation back in again, New Hope's a good way to do it. Just fine. Yeah, redraw, get them invested, and make new stuff after that. But, like, it was 40 years ago.
Force Awakens certainly hits similar beats as far as the story goes, but the characters are different, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, there's Halo no...
is definitely not Vader.
And is there a Ben... Is there an Obi-Wan type figure in this movie? No. Sure, I think Han Solo, to some degree, is a mentor to Rey, but he's not like Ben Kenobi at all. And there's not really a character like Han Solo from A New Hope, because Han Solo is a lot different in this movie than he was back then. But, like, I don't think we should go down this road, because you and I will talk about this for hours, Andy.
I was just thinking, are we stalling because you don't want to talk about this comic?
Oh, no, I want to talk about this comic. It was definitely a comic.
All right. Jen, are you ready to talk about this week's comic?
Yes.
This week's comic.
This week we read Fathom Volume 1 by Michael Turner. This is the first in our New Heroes Are Hard series, is what I'm calling it, because it's really hard to create a new character and to get buy-in from a fan base that wants to read they're Tony Stark, even though Tony Stark's been around for like 80 years. Our comic book fan base is set in our ways, and we want what we want, and we don't care if it's a story that's been told before sometimes. So it's hard to make a new character, and it's hard to break into that kind of fan base. So we're going to do three episodes on new creations, and we're going to start out with Fathom because we've read Spawn before, so we don't want to start there. But something with a similar origin is Fathom and the Aspenverse. So I just want to, before we talk about the comic, I want to lay it out there. And as the trade says, Fathom number one was the top selling single issue in 1998 when it came out, and originally published under Image. So this was, as a new character and a new story and universe, very successful right off the bat. So much so that in 2003, Michael Turner turned around and founded Aspen MLT, a comic book label, and brought all of the kind of Aspen Fathomverse under that label. Very much in the same way that Image and Spawn and McFarlane did years before. And even now, 9 years after Turner's death in 2008, Aspen still publishes Fathomverse comics. The idea, whenever we review this comic, this was obviously successful on some level at creating a new character and a new world and getting people to buy into it. And we'll get into the discussion, but I'm pretty sure at least half of that was because Michael Turner was huge in the late 90s. So when Michael Turner left the big two to make his own piece and make his own world, people were just willing to buy that shit up because he was super popular. I don't think it can be understated how popular he was as an artist and a creator at the time. And about his art style, the number one thing I can say is lots of detail and hella sexy.
It's very 90s.
This thing is so sexy. So all that laid out, I think this is a good place to start a discussion about new characters and new comics and new worlds, because this was obviously really successful in a big way. And the only other thing we've talked about in this kind of vein was Spawn, which we all roundly wanted to give a negative rating to because it was so horrible. So yeah, well, what did you guys think here? Now
that we got that out of the way. Oh man. So in the 6 years since we've been doing this podcast, This is the first comic that I have read where I was like, "This is on the same level of badness as Spawn."
Oh, I think you need to go back and reread Spawn. It's been a while.
Maybe I should. I really don't want to.
I think we should.
I think Jen should.
No. If I have to do it, you do too.
I own them. Okay, I'll let you borrow the hard copy.
This was really like for the first plot line where she discovers stuff, and then there's a civil war, but then also a war with America and Japan. That was kind of like, what the fuck is going on the whole time? And then there was an interlude with like Comedy Hour Moby Dick.
Yeah, that's right.
And then Moe. And then there was a thing with like some weird mom vengeance. And that all happened, and it was almost 300 pages long.
Like a blood merfolk at the end? I think that's what it was.
But they were also icy.
Yeah.
So, like, icy blood mer people. Yeah, right? Like, it really just rolls off the tongue. It's good branding. And lots of, like, chest. Lots of chest. Like, that's what this comic was.
Like, I was just flipping through it right now, and I got to the page where she's like in the hospital, and she's covered by like a bed sheet, but the sheet is like just barely like above her nipples, where I imagine her nipples to be. So she's like in a coma, but she's in a sexy coma.
That was actually the page that I just flipped past that made me say that.
Okay.
Go. There's also a lot of, like, dude chest.
Oh, and, yeah, that's true.
Like, oh, yeah. And spiny seashells and spikes. There's a lot of dude
spike
armor.
You know the part in the, where in the last little story arc where she, like, takes the armor and weapons from from Connor's boat.
Yeah.
And then puts it on over her like street clothes. I thought, oh, those clothes are definitely going to get ripped up. But then they didn't. So I was like, oh, you let me down, comic, because I was sure that's the way you were going to go.
Here's my thing about this comic. If you're not going to fap to it, why are you reading it?
Maybe that's why it's the number one selling comic of 1998. I mean, that's
was a time when the internet was dial up and you had to like let the JPEG load like line of pixels by line of pixels. I mean, this would have been a lot faster. But really, why are you reading this if it is not your wank material?
You know what 1998 wanking was? It was having Napster and downloading a file, and then 4 days later, when the download completed, hoping it was actually what the title said, and not a Trojan horse or a virus or just like some shitty ska MP3s. That's what the late 90s was. It's hoping you had actually downloaded porn and that it wasn't. And even if it was porn, that it was not like some creepy incesty porn or something.
Did you say shitty ska MP3s?
Yes. Yes, I downloaded so much shitty ska in the late 90s. So much.
Wait, so okay. Are they aliens?
No.
Maybe.
They live, from what I understand, they were merfolk who for some reason decided to go beneath the crust of the earth and become, I don't know, like dwarf merfolk. I don't know. We haven't seen. What frustrates me is Michael Turner going into this, you can tell, had a huge contrived plot and story. He knew what this universe was. You can tell, right? Because like you're saying, there's like plots on plots on plots and layers in issue one that don't need to be there. And a good editor probably would have cut a layer or two out. So you can tell that he had more planned out than he had energy to write, or that the story naturally let him explain. To the point where after 300 something pages, we still haven't fucking seen the planet. Like we haven't seen the world below the crust. We've seen like Killian say, "Oh, it's such a magnificent place," and Hawk say, "Oh, you don't even know," and "Oh, this no, show me." I want to see it.
There are so many dropped plot threads in this. Like, what's the deal with the cruise liner? It disappeared for 10 years. Why? How?
Who cares?
Like, what's the deal with it? Or the water guy. Like, there's a guy.
Yeah, the weird
guy made of water.
Yeah. Is it a guy? What happened? I never got a handle on that.
I'm pretty sure that it's her brother.
Probably.
But he just, remember, because there's a part where they're like, oh, hers. Your brother was there too. And I thought, oh, that must be her brother. But then he just like never shows up again after they talk about the brother. It's like, I don't. And she's extremely trusting.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, so Killian like trains her and she's like, okay, I'm going to murder these soldiers. And then it turns out he's bad, and Connor helps her, and she's like, oh, okay, I'm going to trust Connor. And then this Air Force pilot shows up at her house, and he can sleep over.
Oh.
And it's just, she just, like, trusts everyone.
I forgot about the Air Force.
Freaking out a little bit if you, like, if you're, oh, God, Andy, yeah.
So, bruv, I had Adam to the notes. It was the worst scene in the whole comic. When he's drunk calling everything soul brother.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, and then his like actual brother shows up and they punch each other.
There's no reason for him to be there.
Like that doesn't go anywhere.
You know what, when I got to that part, when I got to the part where the twin brother showed up, I guess they weren't twins, but they looked like they might be twins, and then they got into a fight, I thought, this is a soap opera. I'm reading a soap opera with mermaids.
A little bit.
It's absolutely that.
Okay. Okay. What I want to throw out there as an idea to talk about. I think what was really interesting, actually, in this comic, and what could have used more time, and I think it didn't get enough time to breathe because there was too many side plots and things that got dropped and things that didn't matter. What I would have liked to have seen more is the time that she was with Killian and buying in and training in weaponry and becoming a bad person. And the fact that for a while she was, and she bought in, like, if Aspen was a normal human or thought she was human for so long, and she sees Killian wanting to do this new world order to the point where she's starting up like fusion generators around the planet for him. I want to see that because I think that's a bold move to introduce you to a protagonist. And before you ever see her do something heroic or positive, at this point, she's just a person and you buy into her as a character because she's just a person. But the first thing you see her do with her powers is use them for evil. The fact that she gets corrupted quickly, and that she gets not necessarily corrupted, but that she buys into this idea of a new world order, because she's one of these people and she's always known it. I think that's a bold move to take to start your character out there. And I think it is interesting that she did buy into it, but it's supposed to take months, but it takes like an issue in this massive trade. I do find that interesting because I can't imagine picking up a Marvel comic where they introduce Riri Williams and within two episodes, Riri Williams joins, you know, the Masters of Evil. Like I can't see Marvel doing that and having it happen genuinely. I did appreciate that. I was looking for, maybe I was going into this looking for things to find positive. But I thought that was interesting that she honestly, I think earnestly, buys into Killian's vision. She doesn't know all of it, but she buys into the fact that the world's kind of messed up and maybe it does need some fixing.
Yeah. And okay. So I've been pretty mean about this comic so far, but to be actually constructive, I think what you said there has like, it is the main brunt of the problem I have with this comic, and it's that the pacing makes no sense. So it's almost 300 pages long. It's 286 pages in the Kindle edition. It wastes a lot of frame space on action scenes where it's hard to tell what's going on and dialogue that does not need to be there. Mostly people, so you know, saying dialogue. Exactly what they're thinking, but then it's very obvious from the context what they're thinking or doing. Or people just kind of making weird grunt noises as they fight. So there's like a lot of unnecessary frames and there is no time spent whatsoever on the actual character development. So it almost feels like what happened was Turner and O'Neill wrote this out and they were like, well, we want her to do this, this, and this. And they framed out the major plot points, but then they couldn't figure out like how to steer it there. So they just kind of went to that and went to the big event there, showed it to us. And so I do get that comics often need to hinge on the most exciting things to keep readership up. But at the same time, you know, you need to devote like maybe a couple pages to showing the, you know, city beneath the crust or what's actually going on with Killian and her training. You know, we're told a lot of things that we need to believe about her. And part of what makes Aspen such an unbelievable character is that we see her basically be like training to help the bad guys, and then out of nowhere someone says like, oh, you don't have to be evil. And she, I think, the dialogue for her gets very close to, what? I don't have to be evil. I have a choice to not be evil. That's amazing. Maybe I won't do that. And it's like that. It's very stilted on its own, obviously. But like, what got her there? We have no clue.
Yeah.
So we see this major like character development turning point, but since we have no context for how she even arrived at that point, the pacing just feels like incredibly off. And to me, that was genuinely the issue here, because I thought, like, it was a cool alternate universe thing with, like, evil merfolk who are trying to stir up a war on the surface so that they could start some other racial war. But, yeah. I mean, it's an interesting idea.
I mean, the concept of the world isn't bad, but I think you're right, because you usually are. Actually, I think you're almost always right.
Yay!
I mean, we're talking about comics at least. Like, I think that was the most frustrating thing for me, is that I can see what I'm supposed to be seeing in the character here, but I don't. It's not paced well, and it doesn't come out the way it needs to. Like, you see Aspen training in weapons and training in how to use her powers, but there's no actual practical application. And the first time she really has a moment of questioning what she's doing is when she puts it into practice, right? And she basically pulls the blood out of the soldier because she has water powers. And like, yes, you're blood bending in the most brutal way possible. Awesome. But it horrifies her, because I think that should be viewed as an aberration or a perversion of her abilities and her powers. Which, on the flip side, is the end of that story arc when she uses it in a way that is empowering and natural. When she becomes the water and uses it to channel through her. It's more that she realizes that she is becoming a perversion of what she ought to be. And she becomes herself when she embraces it correctly. And that's an awesome character arc. That's beautiful. Like, realizing what you are and realizing that you're being made into somebody else's perverse vision, and that's not truly who you are, even though this person told you that it's what you truly were, and realize, like, having that second revelation again, to truly empower yourself and the new person that you really are. That's a cool story. And it's in here somewhere if you really look for it. But you have to really be looking for it. Also, you said that this hinges on major things to keep the reader interested, and the major thing that hinges and keeps readers interested in this is dad ass.
I think that's key to the story.
I noticed that every time the story seemed to be like slogging along, there'd be like a full page spread of Aspen like surfing, or like half a page of her like, you know, ass and side profile of her boobs. I'm like, oh, okay, this gets me going some more. All right, I can read a couple more pages.
You know, speaking of that, the number of burly men in this was astounding to me, mostly because like each of them almost became a love interest, and then it never pans out.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, there's...
Not even Soul Brother.
Yeah, not even him. There's the boyfriend at the start, like, the ex-boyfriend, who immediately dies. Like, that was actually really unexpected that they just killed him off, because it's, like, burly man. And then there's the Air Force pilot, and then his maybe twin brother, and then there's...
Connor Hawk.
Oh, was I calling him Connor Hawk? It must be like, Connor Hawk is War, right? or Hawk and Dove? Yes. Hawk and Dove, right? He's Hawk?
Yes, you're right.
That's where my mind was going.
Crossover potential. So Cannon Hawk. Yeah.
Even more extreme.
God, that name.
With a capital X.
I'm telling you, it's a soap opera.
Yeah, and Killian, and I think that's all the burly men who were potential love interests, and somehow it just never pans out with any of them, which I actually thought was really strange, but maybe at the same time they, like, try to keep her free so that she can still be, I don't know, written into available. Terrible fan fiction?
Oh, yeah. No, the worst fan fiction to come out of this trade is one where she's involved with the kid who catches her getting kidnapped.
Ugh.
That is the worst.
No. No.
Because you know somebody wrote that. I bet they did. Oh, God. Even the kid was annoying. Well, the kid wasn't that bad. Kids are always annoying in comics because kids are annoying.
Yeah, it could have been worse. The kid was like, he was actually maybe the skeeziest one, though.
Yeah, he was. Hmm.
But he got called out for it, so I think it's okay.
Yeah, he got called out multiple times. And having been like a 12-year-old boy, yeah. you try to act like you're a badass, but you're a fucking 12-year-old boy.
Yeah, exactly. He's kind of innocent. He's skeevy, but innocent.
Yeah. He's not like Terrace.
He don't know how to act. He don't know how to act right.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah, you're getting into character.
Dude, so you know the part, like, this is, I think mostly I just had reactions to different parts of this comic. You know the part where Cannon jumps his motorcycle into the ocean?
Yes.
So in the panel before he jumps his motorcycle, it shows the cliff and there's hang gliders. And I thought, oh, he's going to steal a glider. Nope. And rescue her that way.
Nope. That's not extreme enough.
Hang gliders are pretty extreme.
Not as extreme as leaping off a cliff from your motorcycle.
Yeah, no, he just jumped off. He's like, the insurance will cover it.
I no, the one that made me go, what the fuck, the most is there's like a 2 or 3 page part where General Maylander is talking about how he's having like a chess game with Killian, and he's playing two masters playing each other, and it's like, this is really hyping themselves up a lot. And then the ultimate turn is Killian is like, why would I destroy my own satellites? What? You didn't ever think of that? Come on, you fucking idiot. What the hell?
Yeah, it's like some dude shows up and he's like, oh yeah, those satellites are bad. Trust me.
Yes. They're definitely not mine either. We both need to get rid of them. Now do all of these things for me and I'll show you how.
Yeah, so that plot line, it was like they were writing, they're trying to write 3-dimensional chess, and they wound up with like 3-dimensional Uno, which is just not a thing. You can't do it. It doesn't work. It's just Uno.
It's like he thinks he's playing, you know, like grandmaster chess, but he's like, it's more like Killian's playing, you know, checkers with like a fucking 3-year-old. Just like moving pieces around randomly.
Yeah. That's actually, the Admiral is incredibly naive because he's like, we're going to have mutually assured destruction. And this guy, this fucking ocean man, is just telling him all this shit to do. He's like, start a war with Japan. And the Admiral goes, okay. And he's doing this. He's like, I got a purpose. And it, like, did he never stop and be like, maybe I shouldn't just blindly trust this random dude who claims he is from under the sea? Like, did that not occur to him?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of military is bad and government is bad, okay, in this comic, right? Like, the brother, Soul Brother's actual brother is like somebody we're not supposed to trust just because he's in military intelligence. Like that, alone apparently makes him kind of douchey. I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's lots of people in military intelligence who are actually, you know, good guys and do good things for the world. But apparently he's just a skeevy guy because he's in military intelligence. And then what is it? Oh, yeah, the roommate who's a reporter, like, her shtick is always, like, anti-government. Not even just because she's a reporter, just because I think she's anti-government. Like, there's a strong anti-government thread in here.
It's just a world of really naive anarchists.
Yes! Yes, it is. And a loony spelunker Ahab.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It took me a while, because of the way that the lettering is in this comic, it took me a while to realize that it was Spelunker and not something else. Like, I couldn't tell how many L's there were. I thought maybe it was, like, Spelinker or something like that.
Yeah, the R's... Yeah. I kept getting the R's and the D's confused, especially when they were at the end of a sentence. Because there'd be the D and then the period, so it would look kind of the R's, but also, like, the R's had, like, a big, like, rounded part and then, like, a short leg. So, like, it was hard to tell.
It's really bad when we start getting nitty-gritty on the lettering for a comic.
But that's why I want to pull this back around to Spawn, because you were saying this is one that almost is as bad as Spawn. But in Spawn, if you recall, the lettering was not just bad, but it changed arbitrarily for no reason. And the text boxes changed for no reason, so that they know, like, in one episode Spawn had one color text box, and the next issue had another, and then on like the third one, midway through the issue, he changed from a text box to like a scroll with like different lettering on it, but it was still his internal model. Like, there were arbitrarily changed text boxes and that for no fucking, at least that shit was consistent here. Like, at least Aspen's text boxes were always Aspen colored.
That's fair.
Like, there are fundamental comic book conventions that were not followed in Spawn, and for not in a reason, not in the like know the rules so you can break them kind of way, just for shigs they were not followed. At least in here, this is definitely a comic book that is drawn and laid out and operates like a comic book. Whether or not it's good, it's definitely a comic book that is a comic book. We can at least have that baseline.
Did you notice that all the machines that Aspen gets put into, like, hold her in, like, sexy positions?
Oh, yeah.
She's always kneeling with, like, her hands chained somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, like, unnecessarily.
I don't know, well, for
this comic, it makes sense in this comic. But, like, I don't think those would make good jails. Clearly they don't, because she, like, escapes from all of them.
So I feel like what happened, especially I think the first time we see her powering up one of Killian's machine things, is I think they decided they wanted to draw her like that, and they just wrote the plot around that pose. I'm not kidding. Like, it's a very poster pose. Especially, I think it's one of the first times we see her, like, fully decked out in the ocean person armor. She's very spiky. It's
oh yeah, and it's a full page.
Yeah, and it like, for Cheesecake Art, it's actually quite good. Like, it's I think that it would be very marketable as a poster, or, you know, just a fan favorite, and it seems like the whole thing was kind of heading toward that. So
so I own this because I bought an Aspen Comics Humble Bundle for like $8, because that's what it was for the whole kit and caboodle. And I just downloaded the whole bundle because I was like, fuck it, I got room and time. I'll just let it run overnight. And so I was going through the pages and I finished this. And then I hit the button for next comic. And the next comic after this to load up was the swimsuit edition.
There's a swimsuit edition of this comic.
That's not surprising in any way.
Wait, if there is a swimsuit edition, what is this? What did we read? If this is not the swimsuit
edition. No, the swimsuit edition, these were popular in the late 90s, and they were...
Oh, no, I remember yeah. The X-Men ones.
Yes, the best one is the one that has Ghost Rider. That's by far, that's the best one.
God, look up
Ghost Rider swimsuit
edition.
I'm going to look it up. Namor is good, too, but Ghost Rider is the best. It's literally just him, like, naked on fire on the beach.
I'm afraid.
But this, like, it has... The first, like, two or three are exactly what you expect.
It is a naked skeleton on fire.
The first couple ones are exactly what you would expect. It's just, like, Aspen and, like, the roommate in bikinis and sexy poses. And then there's one that's just, like, Aspen naked. And then it's just, like, strategically placed water drops from the ocean spray. But then you turn the page and there's a really sexy full page of Killian. And I'm like, well, I was not expecting this next. And I closed it out. I was like, I'm done with this.
It's inclusive.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because that's how they got around it. Like, this isn't sexist. I have men in here, too. Obviously.
Yep. No problems here.
No objectification happening here. I'm just drawing art.
Also, oh god, I just want to say, like, so throughout the many, many comics we've read, we've seen a lot of women dressed very strangely with strange proportions and a lot of weird poses. I think it is great, and the most off-putting thing here is every woman in this is wearing invisible high heels. There's, like, not a lady who can walk around, not on her tippy toes, except they're all on the beach barefoot most of the time, or getting out of a swimming pool or something. So they're just walking around on tiptoes without the high heels. It's really weird.
That's just how the those aliens are. That's how their ankles are shaped or something.
They have just, like, really short Achilles tendons.
Yeah.
It's a congenital deformity. Okay.
No, so, I don't
I mean, that's one signal. What tipped me off for what this comic was going to be was when you were first getting introduced to Aspen and she's swimming in the pool and then the roommate shows up, right? And she gets out of the pool and there's like the full body of her on the right-hand side of the page. And her legs are twice as long as her torso. And the proportions are real awkward.
Yeah.
That is a weird looking panel.
Yeah. And I'm like, all right, I know what I'm in for now. This is uncomfortable.
Oh, and that panel, Jen, her feet are literally drawn like she's wearing high heels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
no.
And then erased the. Is it called a stem? I don't know. The heel?
The heel, yeah. So, first off, in that specific panel, her feet are the size of her head, which is like, ooh. But well, you see the same thing happening in the like Ice Blood Merpeople comic, where the mom is also just... Mom. Sexy mom is just standing like that, too.
I mean, if I put my heel right up to my chin, my big toe reaches almost to my hairline.
What are you doing, Andy?
I'm trying to
see.
She's saying it's awkward that the foot is the size of her head.
No. Like, I don't just mean in length. I also mean in girth.
Okay. Because, like, if you had big feet and a small head, I could see that. But, yeah, okay. It wouldn't be. You don't have, like, basketball feet, I guess.
No. It's like the foot is the same, and part of it is the high heel pose, but it really looks like her foot is like the same width as her face.
Okay. And while we're on the art, I want to say, okay.
Sorry. I'm like looking through this comic.
Don't.
No, again with Spawn, there were art choices that were made for no reason. And the art was generally mediocre. But I do want... that's not fair, actually. There were some really cool panels where Spawn just looked badass. I don't know what he was doing, but he looked cool. in this, I do want to say, Michael Turner does a really good job of set pieces and backgrounds and detail. So much like that ship that she comes in on has insane detail on it. And we see it from three different angles, and it's consistently drawn from each different angle. So here nor there on the cheesecake and the anatomy, he's obviously a talented artist. And the amount of detail in every little thing here is incredible. Like, if you pick up the first issue or two and there's like scenes of water, like every little drop is drawn and colored. And there's one of an aircraft carrier that was, I think, maybe a little bit too much, where like every single fin of every single jet was drawn in detail on the aircraft carrier, and the aircraft carrier was drawn in extreme detail, and the water spray coming off of the bow was drawn in. Like, there is insane levels of detail in the first couple issues, but it's funny because when you get to issue 9, there's just flat backgrounds. I think Michael Turner was like, I can't do this every fucking month. He's like, Killian's talking, he gets a flat blue background. But there is, here nor there on anatomy, the set pieces, the gear that they wear, the incredible detail on that. Like, there is obvious, really good, high level, very skillful art happening here, just not necessarily with anatomy.
Yeah, and it's clear. I mean, I will say this, Michael Turner has a lot of fans, and it's not unearned. He, for his specific style, his genre, it's super cheesecake, is very, very good at it. I make fun of it because I think it's really goofy, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily make it not good. I do think that there are issues with it, but I don't think there's a single artist who has only created perfect work, obviously. It's just so not my cup of tea.
Yeah.
Also, Aspen's lips are always very shiny. And the spots where they're shiny never change. So it's like, you, as you keep reading, it stops looking like she has like plump, shiny lips and more like she has cold sores. And that just really bothered me by the end.
Way less sexy, real fast.
Yeah. Do you think that she doesn't need to use lip gloss because she's like super moisturized all the time?
No.
She's made of water?
No, because she's like dehydrated.
Dehydrated.
So she probably goes through lip gloss like by the fucking gallon. That's probably why her lips are so shiny. You know what? Okay. I've got to say, if you were making this comic today and you wanted to have the cheesecake, right? You could make it a plot device. Okay. If you get to that point where she says she's super dehydrated, every page before that, you could have her like, you know, awkwardly lotioning herself up and talking about her dry skin. Like, oh, I've got such dry skin everywhere. Oh no, I just have to lotion so much. It'd be like the decontamination chamber in Star Trek Enterprise, where they just like have decontamination gel, which is basically an excuse to lather each other with their shirts off. Like, but there's a plot reason for it. Like, you could, Michael Turner, you could have had a plot reason for the sexiness. It could have been there.
I mean, let's be real. In universe, there is zero doubt that this woman is just at all times slathered in Vaseline.
That's the worst thing to do, too. Oh, God. It's so...
She's real shiny, but she's got horrible back knee.
The Vaseline's like sticky and gross and ugh. I'm so glad we read this, guys.
I mean, are you really?
It was a lot of reading, but
here's the thing. Like, I think I enjoyed the experience overall. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I necessarily just reading the comic was great, but the experience of us reading it and now talking about it, I'm having a great time right now.
Yeah.
So I will say this sounds super bitchy of me, but I did not enjoy the act of reading it, but I'm really glad that I have read it at this point.
And there were a couple moments when I was like, the fuck is this? Like when the tripod weapon happens. And I'm like, are we fucking the earth right now with laser beams? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, you didn't get that was a sexy spot.
Is the weapon like a sexy earth fucking beam? Is that what's happening right now? But there were moments where I was like, what the fuck is this? And I genuinely wanted to turn the page more because I was like, what the fuck is this? A couple times in a way that wasn't necessarily, I think, maybe unplanned. I don't think they wanted me to see it as like an earth fucking laser beam, but that's definitely a what the fuck is this moment when the beam activates, you know? So there were a couple beats that the comic does genuinely hit. I think the Spawn comparison, I'm going to keep circling back to that, is definitely unwarranted. This is clearly a better comic than that. I can say that. I don't know what the next door's comic was. Since our archive page is broken, I can't like scroll back, but I'm certain this is not in the bottom two of everything that we've read over 6 years.
Okay.
Maybe the bottom five.
I will say, it does get points. I'm flipping through. There's a scene where Canon Hawk rescues the Air Force pilot by carrying him princess style out of the weird blue laser beam vortex that's collapsing. And it's shit like that makes this thing worth reading.
See, but then on the flip side, I will say I was really cringy and almost put it down because I'd read the first 8 issues and I was like, okay, I'm going to read the 9th so we can finish out the Killian story arc. And then, Jen, I think you encouraged us to read the last 2 because you were like, these are fucking ridiculous and you have to read them.
Yes.
But I almost stopped reading the Big Moe story. When Rich Dude is running out to the beach and the 3 women are just like being stereotypical gold diggers in a way that's really uncomfortable to read. I almost put it down there.
Because no other depiction of women in this comic is uncomfortable.
No, I mean, there's uncomfortable and there's like, they're uncomfortable in a way that's objectification. And I think that is expected of a modern reader viewing this art. Like, I think if you see the cover of this comic, of these comics, and you don't expect objectification to happen, then there's something wrong with you. But I think as a modern reader, I can go into a comic and expect a certain level of objectification when I read, say, Power Girl, But also expect to not see her be a money-grubbing stereotype. So for some reason, I think as a reader today versus, 20 years ago, I can differentiate objectification and incredibly negative stereotypes. So I can make the differentiation, and I can move past the objectification because it's still an ongoing prevalent problem in the comic book industry. So when I pick up a comic, I'm willing to set that aside because it's just part of reading a comic, unfortunately. But this stuff with the money grubbing gold digger stereotype is no longer a part of everyday comic book reading. I think for good reason, because we're making progress. So that was like, that was really, really, really difficult for me to continue reading after that. I do want to say, I was like, this is terrible in a way that the past 9 issues were not.
Okay, that's fair.
All right. So I just explained why it's okay to objectify in this comic. Because it could be worse. Do we have anything else we want to say here? There's so much to talk about. We didn't even talk about Terrace's blood mom and that whole storyline.
Yeah, that was... Oh, man. I wanted you guys to read that because it was just so fucking bizarre.
Such a convoluted way to kill somebody, too.
Well, let's just take a moment and summarize. Terrace was thrown into a giant laser beam, and then his mom somehow, his real hot mom, somehow recovered his corpse, and she kidnapped Cannon Hawk so that she could put him in a tank and then, siphon off his flesh onto her son, but then she created a really ugly creature and was like, you're damn ugly, I'm gonna kill you now. And then it said something, and she's like, my baby! And then...
But he was belting.
This is all a 100% accurate synopsis so far.
I know, that's the worst part. And then, they kidnap Aspen for reasons, because she's the woman.
Well, because you need two people to resurrect one.
Apparently. Well, no,
but she was also trying to get revenge on her.
Okay, yeah. Revenge I get. But so then, okay, this is the most bizarre part. We see Terrace, pretty gross decayed before he is turned into some weird, sad sea creature monkey man. But then the mom is like, my baby, puts him back in the tank and separates them. And then they are both whole and perfectly normal again. And then Aspen fights her and deflects some ice. And then she goes, my baby, again. And then they just leave. They're like, okay, bye.
He's her baby.
I got that at this point.
I mean, this is perfectly rational. This is all perfectly rational for David and I who have kids. This is exactly what I would do in the same situation, verbatim.
Okay. You
would build a machine and merge your child into the swamp thing.
Yes, of course.
But then, go to murder her when she's too ugly.
Yeah, because it was an abomination.
Yeah, you can't suffer abominations to live, Jen.
Well, yeah, there's only beautiful people in this comic.
It's like when somebody gets injected with Borg nanoprobes, you just kill them right away.
Yeah,
same thing.
It's exactly the same.
You see your kid come out; they're an abomination. You know, it's just an act of mercy to kill it.
Put them back.
Yeah. Oh God. All right. Well, you guys want to move on and rate this?
Wait, I want to ask you guys a question.
Oh shit!
Quick, okay. Right before we rate this, how did you feel about those pages where half the page was half of a person's upper body? I kind of hated that.
I was not a fan.
Okay. Oh, when it was like, and then there were like panels coming off to the side.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I hated that.
I don't know that I hated it. I was just like, this is a lot of space to use. And I don't need this much detail about a person's face.
Yeah, it's not the worst technique, but I do think that it was not used well here. I think that, you know, it could have been like a good juxtaposition between two people and what they're thinking. I think it was, I don't know, it was just excessive, and there were better ways to show what a given character was thinking at a given time.
So I will say, it works kind of well in the first issue when you get Aspen's face and then her telling her story coming off of the boat, right? And then you get Killian's face and him telling his, not, I mean, they were so vague and veiled, so it wasn't them telling the story, but then you get like the front of the boat as Killian saw it happen, and then you get the weird spirit water dude's face, and then the back of the boat. Like, it's kind of cool because then you get the three different sides of the story, and you can see how at the very beginning these three stories definitely converge and tie into each other. Now, we read 300 something pages, and obviously they didn't, because we still know what the fuck water person is. But the conceit at the beginning was kind of neat. It kind of worked on a certain level. But then, you know, it comes back again with Maylander, I think, and then Soul Brother's brother. And like, it comes back a couple times in awkward places that doesn't have that same effect and doesn't carry the same vibration that the first one did. So it works in the start, but then after that, I was like, I'd just rather have more panels or fewer pages.
Yeah, I think on at least three separate instances, they redid the same event in, you know, the three or four different narratives.
Yeah.
And that's a thing where you can maybe do it once, but if you're just repeating it over and over, it's like you need to find a more economical way to tell your story.
Yeah, especially when a lot of times when they did that, when they did that the second, third, and fourth time, the first panel of those pages were all the same. And not even like the perspective, like we looked at Aspen from different angles, but the events never changed. And the perception of what the event was didn't change based on the perspective. There was just a different way to look at Aspen. Here's a shot of her face. Here's a shot of her torso. Here's a shot of her butt. And she's swimming. That's all it was. Oh wait, we want to rate?
All right.
Before we get into that, and after everything we've said, I do want to make clear, with all due respect, of course, not just because he's a late Michael Turner, but because he's a well-respected artist, this comic would not be in our hands to talk about. And no matter what we said, no matter what rating we're going to give, these people did it. They did the work, they did the art, they did the writing, they did the work, and it's out there, it's in our hands, and we couldn't have talked about it one way or another if they hadn't done that. And that deserves credit for whatever this comic is. That's a huge creative burden, and it's a lot of work to get a comic out there. So I want to thank Michael Turner, Bill O'Neill, Joe Weems, who is the inker, Jonathan D. Smith, who is the colors, Dennis Heister, who is the letters, and everybody else involved in creating this thing, because creation is hard. And whether or not it's successful, it's hard, and the effort deserves credit at the very least. So we got to put that out there. That said, I'm going to make David go first.
Damn it. I was like, not me. Because I feel like I'm either going to set the tone or I'm going to get it wrong.
Okay, here. I'll go.
Okay, you go.
I'm going to give this... you're right, it is hard. I'm going to give this...
I'm saving you for last
because you're on fire tonight. You're literally flames. You're lit AF. I'm going to give this a 1.5. Because I feel like this is not a good comic for a lot of reasons. A 2.5, I think, is a regular comic. I think I definitely did not have a good efficient use of time by reading this. This could have been way shorter, paced way better. Aspen could have had realistic proportions. But that said, as a cheesecake comic... I don't know about you guys, but I have read a number of cheesecake comics in my time. Most of them are horrible. And this is way better than a lot of stuff in the cheesecake genre. I do not think this is anywhere near, say, Jungle Girl, which we read, and it was genuinely fantastic. But as a cheesecake comic, this isn't bad. Cheesecake comic is also, though, a terrible genre. So, you know, as it goes, this is good. But it's not good. So 1.5, I guess, is what I'm going to go with. David?
Yeah, that's about what I was going to give it to. While I had a good time reading it and talking about it.
Oh, yeah. One-handed
reading. What? I totally lost my train of thought now.
Sorry. You had a good time reading it.
Yeah, and the art's good, but the story is just, it's barely a story. I mean, it just jumps around all over the place, and I don't know. I don't really have much to say about it, other than I had a good time talking about it, so I'm just going to go with that 1.5 also.
I feel like the 1.5 is because there's obvious, like, in you and I, David, we both appreciate a well-built world. And yeah. The idea of a world that has a full conception behind it. And I think at the end of the day, I can identify that there is a full conception of what this world is, that the author knows and is telling in a measured way. Like, Michael Turner knows what that underground world looks like. He knows the history of the people. He knows who Aspen is. There's a story about that necklace and what it means and why Aspen was gone for 10 years. There's a story behind all of it that is on purpose. And this world does have a reason to exist. And there is a background, and it's there. It's just told in a really frustrating way. So there is a kernel of something decent in here. It's not Spawn, but there's something.
Yeah, I think that's part of one of the biggest reasons I didn't like this from the story perspective is that there were so many plot lines that were just dropped. Like, maybe they're going to come back. Maybe if I kept reading, they'd come back up again. But there wasn't even any hints that it was going to come back. They just disappeared. Like, the cruise ship and the water guy, who I think is her brother. Like, they're just gone. And that was pretty frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm there with you. Jen.
0.5 star. This comic was like, what? Okay, so normally I feel like a jerk saying a comic was bad, knowing that I could not produce anything remotely good myself and feeling like I have no real space to, like, critique other people's work. But this was not a good comic. It was, I concede it is not as bad as Spawn, but it's not like Batman Odyssey either, where it's like so bad it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I'm gleefully sitting here ripping it apart because I like enjoy being mean, but I think that a lot of what's bad about this comic kind of lends itself to a humorous takedown. The plot lines are incoherent. There's themes that they start on that they never address. Like, environmentalism is a major thing that they keep talking about. Like, humans are destroying the planet, starting with the oceans, and the merpeople are mad about it, but then we don't see any evidence of that whatsoever. And you, as a reader, might know, like, yeah, there's a lot of pollution. There's a giant, like, raft of plastic in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. There's birds and fish and animals that die every day, but none of that is given to us in the comic. You are entirely reliant on your outside knowledge to even arrive at that conclusion. Otherwise, you just accept it at face value. And so much of this comic is accepting things at face value, like that Aspen believes that Killian's cause is just, because in one panel she says it is, or maybe two panels because they want to reinforce it. But then, like, you know, half an issue later, oh no, he's evil. And we have to accept that at face value. We don't know why anyone's doing anything. There's no strong motivation for any action that anyone ever takes, except every so often when people hit on Aspen, and then the motivation is very blatantly obvious. The characters, like, randomly disappear. There's no economy of storytelling in terms of, like, how the frames are used on a page-to-page or even frame-to-frame basis. A lot of time is devoted to kind of confusing fight scenes, random grunting, rehashing the same thing over and over, like, literal panels over and over from different viewpoints, where maybe you know, I would have taken crowded, differently colored narrative boxes all smushed onto the same page over that. So there's just a lot of bizarre in here. I do give it half a star because I do think that Michael Turner is very good at his type of art. He is known as being, you know, kind of the predominant cheesecake artist, and I think that's a very well-earned reputation. He does what he does well in that regard. At the same time, like, you know, we talked about some of the not as good aspects, and like, I can't excuse the badness of this comic just because it's cheesecake. I've read good cheesecake. I've read really enjoyable stuff. And this was not fun to grind through. It was fun to talk about in the end. And I'm, and I'm glad that I read it, but I did not enjoy the process of reading it. So I could not recommend this to anyone. So half a star.
Oh, what was the other cheesecake? Oh, Tarot, Witch of the Black Rose, right?
Oh, yeah. That was the ultimate cheesecake comic.
That was a fun one. It was really, that was kind of so bad it's good.
God, no, I don't know. I don't know. Because the last issue of that Tarot trade was good because it was so coy. With like the sword covering the boobs. It was like the original One Finger Challenge. Like that, okay. That last issue redeemed that trade, but otherwise, I think I would have preferred this. I don't know, because that just is like slapdash, rehashed world building. At least this feels like there's an original idea behind it. I don't know. I want to give credit to the fact that there's original ideas in here, but I, every time I want to do that, I get so frustrated by the way it's done. That I read 300 pages and I never saw the city. I don't know who these people are. The only thing I know about her people is Killian, which is obviously just like a random rogue terrorist faction. And that's not what I should know about this world after 300 pages. I mean, in terms of cheesecake we read, I think at the end of this, if you do want to read good cheesecake, do go read Jungle Girl because it is great. And they're Volume 2 of Jungle Girl, the second omnibus they're starting, they printed new Jungle Girl stuff, and it's also pretty good. It's just fun. You can have fun cheesecake.
Or even Witchblade. If you really...
No.
You know... Yeah. Read no. Witchblade over this, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Ooh. Ooh. Huh.
Yeah, I don't hold this in any high regard.
I mean, I don't either, but Witchblade was terra bad.
I mean, like, I did summarize those two issues, like, kind of verbatim, like, dramatically. But really, the premise of this comic is, like, sea princess from a subterranean Atlantis, who is also a PhD in marine biology, gets superhero powers, does not do anything superheroic with them, instead gets embroiled in super race war.
Yeah, but Witchblade is just like woman gets powers and is used by men for four issues. Like, at least Aspen did get used by men for like six issues, so I don't know. I guess maybe not much better. Anyway, we're done. We're done. we will continue our discussion of new characters and creating them, and we'll kind of evolve the conversation next week when we read one that was done in universe. Next week, we're going to read Voodoo, What Lies Beneath by Ron Mars. If you're not familiar, Voodoo was a launch title for the New 52. She was an all-new character created for the New 52, who immediately was embroiled in controversy because Voodoo is a witch stripper, I think. So that's going to be next week. We're going to do Voodoo, What Lies Beneath by Ron Mars. And after that, we're going to read Silk, The Life and Times of Cindy Moon. By Robbie Thompson, which is actually supposed to be good and not horrible. So I'm really looking forward to that one. But we're going to have all that conversation. We have a whole thing coming up after that. And after that, if you want to know what we do have coming up, say like a month from now, and you want to read ahead, or if you see something interesting, go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, click on the button that says future shows, and the whole schedule is there. If you want to see any of our previous 306 episodes, you can go to welcometocomics.com and click on past episodes, and they're all listed there. And in that giant list of that, plus the future episodes, your favorite comic or something you really wanted to hear us talk about is not there. There's a page that for contact that says contact us, I think, or just contact. I don't know. Click on that. There's a form you fill out. It goes straight to my personal inbox, so we're definitely guaranteed to see it. Or you can contact us via the social medias. You can get to me on Twitter at Jollyanna. You can find Welcome to Comics on Facebook, and any of those work. And of course, if you like the show, hop on iTunes, give us a rating, write a review. It helps other people find the show. And go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and support the show. You know, money's good. It's generally a good thing, but a penny even shows that you care. So do us a favor. Go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and just, you know, become a patron for a penny or more. However much you feel like you enjoy the show, and we'll take it to heart. We genuinely will. But yeah, next week, Voodoo, What Lies Beneath. I'm excited to see how much worse it can get. All right. Until then, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.